It's Black History Month. Welcome to our conversation about what that means. I am E.R. Shipp, a professor in Morgan State University's School of Global Journalism and Communication. And I'm here with students from my class, Penelope Blackwell, Curtis Knowles, and Jordan Thomas. We are the Opinionators. I remember when Black History Week was what we observed. That's how long ago I can recall these February happenings. It was a given that we'd have special exhibits, special programs at the Black school that I attended. This was in the days of official segregation, by the way. And I also remember having to fight to observe even a day at the white school that I helped to integrate in my hometown, Conyers, Georgia. The week became a month in 1976 at the behest of President Gerald Ford. So what are your earliest memories of Black History Month?
My earliest memory of Black History Month began in elementary school, where I had to research and report on prominent Black figures in the community. And some of those people included Bessie Coleman, Madam C.J. Walker.
How did you come up with the list? Did the teacher give you a list?
Yeah, she would often assign us people to research, or we would have to go to the library that was in the school and just pick out a book and then research that person and take what we read and formulate a report.
Was it an exciting assignment, or it was one of those, oh, wow, we got to do this stuff?
It was sometimes it was exciting. I remember at one point for one of those presentations, Bessie Coleman specifically, I had to dress up, and I got this little hat and like goggles like a pilot would wear.
Bessie Coleman was a pilot, we should say that.
Yes. Bessie Coleman was the first African-American woman pilot. And from that experience, I remember, you know, dressing up like her and being so excited to just share what I learned about her.
So. Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
Hello, I'm Curtis. My first Black History Month memory, or at least the ones that I can recall, is watching the film My Friend Martin, which is like some like animated cartoon.
Was this?
I think it came out in the 90s. I can't remember the exact like release date, but essentially it's about a Black kid and his white friend, and they go to Dr. Martin Luther King's house, like, in the present time. Now, that present time was probably, like, the 90s. But even still, it was, like, a couple years after King's passing. And essentially, it acts as a time machine, and they go back in time. And he gets to actually become friends with Dr. Martin Luther King, him and his white friend. And because they go back in time to, like, the 60s, or actually, it might have been the 50s, because Dr. King was a kid, they just get to see how, like, you know, how times were, like, with segregation and racism, like, they had, like, a Spanish friend, and she was, like, a maid, like, when they went back in time. And they were like, what are you doing? So, yeah, it's kind of like that. And I just remember just watching that video a lot.
And what did you get from that, if you recall?
To be honest, it was just one of those, like, racism is bad, you know, treat everyone the same and equally. But it was just, like, a fun little thing to watch for Black History Month.
What about you, Jordan?
I remember learning about Black History Month by doing book reports in school on Black history leaders like Rosa Parks, Dr. Martin Luther King. Also visited the Great Blacks and Wax Museum, and I saw wax figures of Black people. And
I've never really gotten into the whole wax museum thing. I know a lot of people in Baltimore go to the Great Blacks in Wax Museum, and it's a must-see kind of destination place, but I haven't quite gotten into that yet. But it feels like it would be kind of scary in a way to see all these human-looking things there. But anyway, we all had these interesting experiences, I guess. But, you know, it wasn't until, I guess, I was assigned to do an article for this USA Today special Black History Month edition. I hadn't really thought about the fact that there is a theme chosen every year by the Association for the Study of African American Life and History. It's called ASALA. And ASALA was started in 1926 by Carter G. Woodson, who gave us Black History Week first, and now it became Black History Month. ASALA is kind of the guardian of Black History Month. So this year, the theme was Black Migrations. I went to a lunch last Saturday, the annual Black History Lunch, where the president of ASALA spoke about why they chose Black migrations as a theme.
There is no word that better connotes the complexity of our history than the word migration. It brings to mind both pain and unbounded hope. It brings to mind forced and violent separation of Africans from their homeland and from their families in the transatlantic slave trade. And it tells the painful story of separation and sale of loved ones who, chained together, trekked across the United States via the domestic slave trade. And that existed in this country all the way through the Civil War. But it also speaks to how we got over. The fugitives who dared to flee from bondage, the exodusters who went to Kansas, the families who packed up their belongings and moved to Detroit and Chicago and Ohio and New York and to Washington, D.C. And they made new lives for themselves, and they created many new cultural expressions. And we tell the story about migration because it's a part of our own individual lives, our own personal movement from place to place. So ultimately, these stories of migration, the good and the bad, the easy and the uneasy, are ultimately, again, about our strivings, about our endurance, and of course, our perseverance in America.
So we often hear people, when they get together, asking, where are your people from? So I'm going to ask you guys that. Where are your people from?
I know that for my family, specifically my father's side of the family, all of those people came from North Carolina. All of my family members came from North Carolina, Liberty, North Carolina, to be exact. And we still have land there. Not too far from my family house, there's the school that my grandmother went to. And before that, I know that her father, my grandmother's father, was a pastor in the area. And that's as far as I...
So when did they leave North Carolina to come to Baltimore?
My grandmother left North Carolina, I don't know the year, but...
Around World War II or in the 60s or... We think of the Black migration as starting around World War I, which would be the teens, and continuing in different waves around World War II, another wave started, and then it continued into the 70s when millions of Black people left the deeper South and made their way up north. Some people actually thought Baltimore was the North, but I think they found out soon enough that it wasn't. What about you, Curtis? Where are your people from?
Well, on my mother's side of the family, they're native Washingtonians, as my mom likes to say. They've been like in the DMV area, I think, since, you know, they arrived. I know we had some land in Hampton, Virginia, and we had some people in Southern Maryland, and then we had some people like in West Virginia, which is kind of a little off to the west, but still around that same area. So, and they've essentially been in that area for the past couple hundred years. My father's family, though, they, I believe, arrived in the Caribbean because they were Cuban, and then they went up to Florida, and they kind of settled, like, in southern Florida, like, around Fort Myers and that area. Now, my father personally, because my grandfather's in the military, he came up to DMV area, which is how him and my mom met. They're actually high school sweethearts. Oh. So, yeah. And, yeah. That's
Jordan?
My people.
You're a Baltimorean yourself, but where are your folks from?
On my father's side of the family, some people come from North Carolina, and on my mother's side, they all were raised here in Baltimore, Maryland. They're from this area.
And most of the time, people hit the road because they were looking for a better life. One of the things that drew people to Baltimore were the manufacturing plants, the shipbuilding industry, and all of that stuff, right? Sparrows Point. So I didn't realize that my family had been part of this great migration until I began doing family history research recently. And it's just amazing to me. I thought that my folks all were from around where I grew up, Conyers, Georgia, which was pretty rural when I was a kid, but now it's part of the metropolitan Atlanta area. But now I realize that people left in the 19-teens for Detroit, for Columbus, Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio, Dayton even. I think there were a lot of auto industry plants in the area. Some even worked in the steel mills in Pittsburgh, and I found some in Boston. So they were everywhere that there was a great migration point. I think I found people. New York, a lot of people ended up in New York too. But one of the things that I was surprised by was, again, from the luncheon, Dr. Tiffany Gill from Delaware talked about the significant role that women played. They were kind of the force behind the Great Migration. And I hadn't thought about it that way. I knew that a lot of women were in the North, many of them working as domestics and working in factories. But it hadn't dawned on me that they were one of the driving forces. And Dr. Gill actually pointed out that they were not just fleeing racism. They were also fleeing threats that they found in their homes and in their communities.
And in many ways, the history of the Great Migration is a Black woman's story, is Black women's history. Since the majority of those who left during the Great Migration were Black girls and young women between the ages of 13 and 39 years old. In other words, we cannot talk specifically about the Great Migration as just a monumental demographic shift unless we take their lives seriously. And as historian Darlene Clark Hine has noted for us, one of the motivating factors for Black women to leave the South was not just to escape the multi-layers and the perils of racial inequality, but also the dangers that they faced, unfortunately, within their families, within their homes, and their communities. In other words, the women who journeyed north were often not just fleeing the wrath of Jim Crow, but the peril of sexual and domestic violence as well.
For whatever reasons people found themselves on the move, they did have a great impact on this nation. And we see that throughout what's called American culture now. A lot of that was highlighted in this special issue that USA Today distributed for Black History Month. In general, I'll tell people who haven't had a chance to see it, this is a time of the year that a lot of corporations like to put a lot of money into advertisements and special supplements, if we're talking publications, special programs on television news. You can't escape that this is Black History Time. And USA Today took it a little further with a special standalone edition that's packed full of information. I wonder what you guys thought about this. What were your impressions of what USA Today did? It's called Black Migrations, or it's actually called Exodus, I think, and it focuses on Black migrations in keeping with the theme chosen for this year.
I really like I guess, special that they did with this, because it is very informative. And it shows our journeys, whether it be straight from Africa or if you only remember your family from being in a specific place in America and then moving, you know, north, south, or where have you. But I really like how the whole piece was curated. It has a nice flow to it. Like, it starts off with the migration, since that was, like, the main theme of the piece. And then it kind of like branches off into like the respective areas that the people moved to. Like when there was the massive movement back to the South, I believe in the right before the 50s, when people was moving back down South.
Because, well, they started moving back down South more like after the 70s.
Oh, the 70s.
In the 50s, they were still hitting the road going north and west.
Oh, so with that, now that I know that, so it was the other way. Because I know a lot of people were leaving the South because of the increase in lynchings. And they talk about the lynching museum, which I believe is called like the Freedom and Equality Museum title. But yeah, it's essentially the lynching museum and all the lynchings that went on in the South during that time. So they were escaping that. They were talking about how artists were moving, well, people were moving out west. And one of my favorite articles in the piece was about Woodstock. And a lot of black artists were performing out there, which I know is
no, Woodstock California. Was in New York.
Even still, it's still, I like how it's like how people moved and where we moved to, we made the best out of the situations where we were there and put in. So I really like that.
What impressions did you have, Penelope?
It was well written. And I think that the words were organized under the umbrella of agency, where, you know, agency being where people, black people, took control of their destiny and decided to take the situation that they were placed in and make it their own and advance further in society.
I think one of the topics that came through was that, unlike what's often the case when we hear stories about our past, it's often black people being victims and reacting to other people. And I think what you're getting at is that in some of the articles we saw black people were taking charge of their destiny and saying, I'm not going to remain here in the South on these farms. I'm going to see what else is out there. So you found people going to the West. We have cities in Kansas. Nicodemus, Kansas is featured in the section. You had people leaving the country altogether. So you see a lot of movement. Definitely saw a lot of movement to the major cities that became the industrial cities and the port cities. So Detroit, Chicago, Boston, New York, all of that. But it was black people saying, we're going to take charge of our destiny as much as possible.
I agree.
What impressed you?
The black migrations, the great migrations. Also what impressed me was the article that you wrote, Professorship, about 1619. And also I found learned something about Allison Duncan. She was the first African-American White House reporter to receive press. I didn't know anything about that. She was it says here she was a pioneer in American journalism.
She was. And that's the thing about Black History Month, that we can all learn something, no matter how much we think we already know about this. Now, you mentioned 1619. That's kind of been in the news a lot. The governor of Virginia has gotten himself into trouble quite a bit. He appears to have been in a photograph in his medical school yearbook. He's either the one in blackface or he's the guy in the Klan suit, but whichever way, it's not a good look. He's been explaining that he has used blackface before. That's putting on burnt cork, or in his case, shoe polish, to make himself look black, and then using red lipstick to exaggerate his features. A lot of white people, it turns out, in Virginia are coming forth saying they did this in the past. But in any case, in trying to explain that, he mentioned that this is the 400th anniversary of blacks arriving in what's now Virginia. And he used the term indentured servants to describe those 20 blacks who were on the first ship to arrive in what's now Hampton. That triggered a big debate that's still going on. I kind of laugh at it that people are getting so riled up about history. That's a good thing that they're talking about history, I guess. But he called them indentured servants, and he was being interviewed by Gail King of CBS, and she said, in other words, slavery. So she was equating indentured servitude and slavery. So both she and he were kind of off the mark. And that's kind of indicative of the way we are with history. Mostly we don't know what we're talking about. Well, we do a lot of talking about it. 1619 is an interesting point to look back on and sort of make a some measure of how far we've come. But it doesn't definitively say that slavery began in Hampton area in 1619. That's when blacks arrived there, and the debate is what their status was. We won't be able to resolve that, but it's a fascinating conversation to be having now. I recommend that everybody head up to Virginia to take advantage of some of these programs that are going on throughout the year marking 1619. But you guys, I know you have mixed feelings about Black History Month because it focuses too much on the past. And tell me what you have to say about that.
I personally just believe that while, yes, we should always look to the past, because I know there's an old saying that the shadows of the past brighten the future. So I'm not saying that we should, like, not look back to our old heroes. I'm just more saying, like, we shake it up a bit. Like, we all know Dr. King. We all know Malcolm X. We all know Rosa Parks and their contributions to the cause and to the fight. But, you know, we need more, like, obscure people. Like Jordan was saying, Miss Allison and Betsy, the first pilot. Like, we need to learn more about them and just know that Black people, we've made strides in all areas.
But I hear what you're saying, but I think you were also saying, or some of you were saying, that even those people you just mentioned are the past. You wanted to hear some more contemporary examples of what it means to be Black in America.
Yeah, people pretty much from the 80s onward, like, and what they've done to the culture and how they've helped.
What they've done to the culture or for the culture?
To and for, because we are the culture, if we're being honest, but that's just me.
I believe that it's important to know your past so that history does not repeat itself. It's important that we recognize and we know our history. I mean, even like you just asked me the questions around what year, you know, my father's side of the family migrated from North Carolina to D.C. It's imperative for me to know stuff like that. You know, for us to know things like that about our history, but it's also important that we recognize what's going on in present day and those that are making a difference and adding to our history in the present current time.
Well, I think you make some good points, and that was another point also made at this luncheon that I attended, where Dr. Gill from Delaware talked about how we can use these stories of the past, and she was focusing specifically on the Great Migration. We can use those as a call to action for today. And I think maybe we'll end on that note. I'm sure we'll be back in another year talking about Black History Month and its themes. That brings us to the end of this podcast by The Opinionators, and we hope you will tune in again.
Like those who came before us, we must be willing to hit the roads, to hit the streets, to disrupt our lives, and to risk it all to imagine a better future and a more just nation. Those who participated in the Great Migration, like the two women with whom I began, were part of a social, political, and economic movement that declared well before the hashtags that not only did Black lives matter, but all Black lives matter, including the lives of women and girls and the economically vulnerable. This is the legacy that we have inherited from one of the many migrations that African Americans have participated in, the Great Migration. It was then, as it should be now, a call to action.